Subcommittee on Courts, the Internet, and Intellectual Property will come to order. I'm going to recognize myself for an opening statement, then the ranking member, then the ranking member of the full committee. This is a wonderful turnout this morning. It's nice to see a lot of familiar faces and a lot of new faces as well, which is an indication, I think, of how important the subject at hand is. Let me recognize myself for an opening statement. Today, the subcommittee continues its inquiry into issues surrounding music licensing. However, instead of identifying the problems in the music industry, we will hear about a possible solution that has been suggested by the Copyright Office. The music industry has evolved from simple business models focused around either the distribution of physical items, such as compact disc or broadcast on the radio, to a dynamic digital marketplace where new business models evolve rapidly. The laws that set out the framework for the licensing of musical rights in this industry are outdated, and some say beyond repair. The Copyright Office's idea, therefore, represents a creative way for how mechanical and performing rights would be administered in this country. Since the draft focuses on what the Copyright Office feels is the best approach to music licensing laws, it does not address any of the issues that would accompany the transition to such a system, nor does it address the operation of the music industry before the enactment of such legislation if that were to occur. The Copyright Office has not addressed such issues because it is more important to first determine whether the system suggested by the Copyright Office is worth considering than determining how best to accomplish the required transition. Some issues that the subcommittee would need to resolve, but that are not included in the draft, include how to handle any rate disputes that may arise. Should copyright royalty judges' decisions or other similar processes be used to settle rate disputes, or should a pure free market approach rule? We have already seen this issue arise in the context of the Television Music Licensing Committee's dispute with CSAC that was debated during the subcommittee's Public Performing Rights Organization oversight hearing last month. Members of this subcommittee have an open mind on how to reform American music licensing laws, but not on the need to do so. Music licensing reform is essential. If legal services are going to be able to compete with free, they must be able to quickly offer legal music. That does not mean that the music licensing law should be written for the sole benefit of online services. For example, some music groups have suggested the creation of one super agency to handle all music licensing. Others have suggested a direct negotiations approach. Whether or not it makes sense to create new entities will be considered as a part of the process of developing legislation. Finally, I would note that for the interested parties, following the testimony today, that there are 7 calendar days to submit written testimony for the record, commenting on the Copyright Office's draft and the testimony given today, and we very much encourage those comments just so we'll have a feel for how everyone thinks about the subject. With that, I'll recognize the ranking member, Mr. Berman, for his opening statement.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for scheduling this hearing on what my at least preliminary look at is a very bold initiative by the Copyright Office. The Copyright Office continues to serve as a valuable resource on many different copyright issues, including Section 115, and I'm especially interested in hearing its opinions on improving our current system of music licensing. In anticipation of the Grokster decision, I think it's important to recognize that the problem of rampant piracy over peer-to-peer networks serves as a reminder of the dire need to address digital music licensing reform. Piracy harms an industry that provides jobs throughout the country, including my district, from the recording artist to the sound engineer to the many businesses that support the full range of musical arts. In order to enable legitimate online music distributors to compete with the choice and ease of so-called free music provided by internet pirates, we need to give users the ability to receive their share of music anytime, any place, and in any format, while ensuring that the creator receives his or her rightful compensation. According to reports of the NDP group, legal online music sources have gained a solid foothold against file-sharing networks. Though proliferation and success of new digital music services, such as the Apple iTunes download service, the recent launch of Rhapsody and Yahoo portable subscription services, and the recent success of new physical formats such as dual disc, CD, DVD, all speak to innovation in the distribution mechanisms for music content. However, a fundamental question remains as to whether the current licensing system, or the one being proposed, gives these new music products and services a realistic opportunity to compete and overcome the free alternatives provided by the peer-to-peer networks. Rewards for innovation are hard enough to come by for the songwriters who oftentimes are the first to create, but the last to be paid. But the unfettered distribution of music content over file swapping services prevents them from receiving a major source of potential revenue. Our focus must remain on providing rightful compensation to those that provide our music. Philosophically, the idea of repealing any of the compulsory licenses, 114 or 115, has great appeal and is, pardon the expression, music to my ears. The idea that the market would be required to yield fair value for a musical work has long been the hope of many copyright owners. However, at the same time, we need to be mindful of the consequences that a free marketplace may have on online music distribution services. They compete in a marketplace where the market price of the pirated music is free. Therefore, we must facilitate legitimate digital online music services in order to combat the pirates and reclaim the treasure. I look forward to hearing from the Register of Copyrights to provide further details of how this draft would address some of the practical issues, such as a transition period and creation of a fluid marketplace to begin leveling the playing field for music services to those of Grokster Kazaa. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. The gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Conyers, the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, is recognized for his statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to be here and to see our Register of Copyrights with us to make a major presentation this morning. And I look out in the audience, and the gang's all here. This could be a potentially significant discussion that we have amongst ourselves, and so I'm happy you're doing this. Could I just indicate for the record that I'm weighing in on the side of a narrow redrafting of Section 115. It seems to me that the larger the proposals around this bill get, the more dangerous this is going to become to some of those who are in the music business. And I raise a small flag of recognition to the songwriters in this music industry who are paid less than anybody else I know for their creative works. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to retain the ability of these writers to negotiate a fair rate for their musical content. And while a rate court would appease some seeking a quick resolution of royalty disputes, it seems to me that private negotiations are still the most appropriate forum for these circumstances. And so I'm happy to add these comments and look forward to the witness's contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Conyers. Without objection, other members' opening statements will be made a part of the record. And may I ask our witness to stand and be sworn in, please? Would you please raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Please be seated. Mary Beth Peters became the United States Register of Copyrights in August 1994. From 1983 to 1994, she held a position of policy planning advisor to the Register. She has also served as acting general counsel of the Copyright Office. Previously, Ms. Peters, from 1986 to 1995, was a lecturer in the Communications Law Institute of the Catholic University of America's Law School, and previously served as adjunct professor of copyright law at the University of Miami School of Law and at the Georgetown University Law Center. Ms. Peters is the author of the General Guide to the Copyright Act of 1976. Ms. Peters received her undergraduate degree from Rhode Island College and her law degree with honors from the George Washington University Law School. Ms. Peters, we welcome you today. We look forward to your testimony. And as we discussed previously, because you're the only witness, please feel free to take more than the 5 minutes. And we understand you'll be somewhere between 5 and 10. That'll be great. Whatever time you need, we're interested to hear what you have to say. And please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Berman, members of the subcommittee, thank you for asking me to testify on my recommendations on how to facilitate the licensing of music by reforming Section 115 of the Copyright Act, the compulsory license for the making and distribution of physical phono records and digital phono record deliveries of non-dramatic musical compositions. Let me start by contrasting how public performance rights and the reproduction and distribution rights for music are licensed. Songwriters and music publishers license public performances through three performing rights organizations, PROs, ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. Virtually every song that anyone could ever wish to license is in its repertoire, in the repertoire of one of the three, which offer blanket licenses for public performances of all of the songs in their repertoires. In contrast, a record company or digital music services or music service that wishes to obtain a license to reproduce and distribute phono records of a musical work must obtain a separate license for each musical work it wishes to license. The license must be obtained directly from the music publisher or, in many cases, the agent, the Harry Fox Agency. Harry Fox claims that it licenses over 90% of the commercially significant music distributed in the United States. But the Digital Music Association claims that Harry Fox licenses only about 65% of, quote, available music. Whatever the figure may be, it seems clear that the Harry Fox Agency can license only a fraction of the works licensed by the PROs. Last year, in its testimony, the National Music Publishers Association stated that Harry Fox's available catalog is well in the hundreds of thousands of musical works. In contrast, at a hearing last month, BMI stated that it oversees a repertoire of more than 6.5 million musical works. ASCAP testified that there are millions and millions of works in its repertoire. Thus, it's relatively easy for a digital music service to clear the rights to publicly perform any and all non-dramatic musical works. It's not quite one-stop shopping, but it literally is three-stop shopping. In contrast, it's virtually impossible to clear the reproduction rights for all such works, no matter how many stops you make. Unlike the public performance right, the reproduction and distribution rights are subject to Section 115's compulsory license. As a practical matter, Section 115 simply sets a ceiling on the rates that can be charged for the making and distribution of phono records, and licenses are actually obtained from the music publisher, Harry Fox, or another agent. These differences in the licensing regimes for public performances and for reproduction and distribution have only recently created difficulties due to the rise of digital music services, which aspire to be celestial jukeboxes that can provide you with performances or copies of any song you may wish to hear. Digital music services need to clear reproduction rights for all songs. While they can fairly easily obtain blanket licenses from PROs, obtaining the reproduction and distribution right has proved to be extremely difficult. The second major hindrance to music licensing for digital transmission is that almost any kind of digital transmission of music involves the implication of both rights. PROs will assert a right to license and receive royalties for the performance right, and Harry Fox and music publishers will assert a right to license and receive royalties for the reproduction and distribution rights. And in many cases, both rights are in fact implicated. This is a problem because licensing of music is today divided into two separate markets, one for public performance, one for reproductions and distribution. This pits two different middlemen who represent the same copyright owner against each other. Each wants and demands a piece of the action. But whether or not two or more separate rights are truly implicated and deserving of compensation, it seems inefficient and unfair to require a licensee to seek out two separate licenses from two separate sources in order to compensate the same copyright owner for the right to engage in a single transmission of a single work. There are no such difficulties when it comes to the licensing of rights in sound recordings embodying the same musical work. And that's because record companies, unlike music publishers, have not split up the rights and engaged separate middlemen to exploit separate rights. They issue a single license to cover everything. Because of this, Section 115 needs to be reformed to ensure that our music industry can continue to flourish in the digital age. The question is not whether to reform Section 115, but how. One solution would involve expansion of the compulsory license to cover all the rights necessary to make digital transmissions. And that is still worth exploring. But I'm convinced that I was right last year when I told you that as a matter of principle, I believe that the Section 115 license should be repealed and that licensing of rights should be left to the marketplace, most likely by means of collective administration. The Copyright Office has long held that statutory licenses should be enacted only in exceptional cases, when the marketplace is incapable of working. And it's worth noting that the United States is virtually alone in having a compulsory license for phono records. The rest of the world has managed to resolve music licensing issues without compulsory licenses, and most frequently by collective licensing. We should do the same. We should let the licensing of reproduction and distribution rights take place, for the first time in our history, in the marketplace. We should do so by building on the strong record that our PROs have built in issuing blanket licenses for performance rights, and allow the PROs to do the same for the reproduction and distribution rights. I don't have time to describe all of the details in our proposal, but in my written testimony and in the accompanying draft legislative text with its section-by-section analysis, the details are provided. In a nutshell, my proposal would convert the PROs to MROs, Music Rights Organization, and give them the right to license the reproduction and distribution rights. It would require them to offer what is in effect a uni-license, a unified license, a single blanket license for digital transmissions that cover all three rights, public performance, reproduction, and distribution of phono records. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peters. I'll recognize myself for some questions. And the first, and maybe I should comment, this is a wonderful turnout on the part of members as well. That's how important the subject is and how much we appreciate your testimony. Ms. Peters, some of the industry groups have recommended or advocated some type of a super agency instead of your proposal. How efficient would that be or not be, in your opinion?
Well, I would actually oppose that at this point in time. The one thing it does do is it would allow one-stop shopping, but it would impose another layer of administration and perhaps another layer of transaction cost. And I think there would be an antitrust concern. It could reduce competition. So at this point in time, I would not necessarily favor going that way.
Okay. Suppose our goal was to have high revenue and low overhead. What would be the most efficient licensing system that you'd recommend?
I would suggest that it's the one that I propose.
Okay, why would that increase revenue and reduce overhead?
Because you would be able to license all works, and because all users of digital music would have PROs to go to or MROs to go to and get what they needed, I think it would enable a lot more legitimate use of music and bring in more revenue.
Okay. Speaking of MROs, under your proposal, how many MROs do you think would exist? Would it be four or would it be 40?
Let's put it this way. It is possible that there could be many MROs, but I would suggest that it would be unlikely. There are expenses in setting up an MRO, and in fact today other MROs or PROs could have in fact developed, but they haven't. In the performing rights area, It went from 1914 until 1939 before a second one showed up in the form of BMI. So I think that it's unlikely. In the mechanical rights area, technically there may be several, but only one predominant PRO or collective licensing organization, the Harry Fox Agency. So I have no reason to believe that we would have a proliferation of MROs.
Ms. Peters, what do you think we need to learn from what other countries' experience have been with music licensing? What has worked in other countries, what has not worked, and does that influence your recommendation?
A number of countries actually have, the PROs have combined the reproduction right with, in fact, the performance right. That is a plus. I do have to say that in other countries they have different problems that they're struggling with. But with regard to administering both rights, there are many who actually do administer both rights.
Okay. One further question. This gets into a subject that is still contentious to a lot, and that is royalty rates. If royalty rates cannot be established by private negotiations, I know you favor some form of binding arbitration, but why would that be the recommendation?
Well, actually, I think what we would basically feel is that the marketplace should, we should attempt to use the marketplace. And if, in fact, it turns out that there's a problem, then maybe you turn to, a consent decree with a rate court. But I don't think that you leap there. And there's alternatives. There's the copyright royalty judge system that you could look at if, in fact, a problem developed. But at this point in time, I would actually favor letting the marketplace try to work.
Right. I just can say, when it comes to royalty rates, you still prefer the free market approach, letting that be negotiated rather than imposed by the government or by other entities. Okay. Last question. You made a curious statement that I thought was a valid statement in your written testimony, and you said that you thought the current system, which is to say Section 115, quote, inhibits the music industry's ability to combat piracy. And I thought it would be interesting to hear why you thought that was the case.
It actually goes back to my first answer to the first question. If it's too difficult to obtain the license, then people might use the works without permission, and that actually increases unauthorized distribution of musical compositions. So for me, in order to decrease piracy or to take away the excuse that, well, I couldn't get a license, you need an efficient system in place.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Peters. The gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Conyers, is recognized for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for being with us today, Ms. Peters. Where does the, in your view, the concept of remuneration come in, and how would it be affected by the proposal in the draft that you have before us for songwriters?
From my perspective, it would be a blanket license that would be negotiated in the marketplace. The piece that we have been very critical of over the years is that the existing Section 115 sets a ceiling, and people bargain down from the ceiling. And I don't like seeing a ceiling. I noticed that the songwriters said, well, they would like a floor. You can't go below a particular level. Well, that may be true, but the ceiling, in fact, is a problem.
Well, you dislike ceilings, but not, you don't feel too bad about floors.
Well, basically, the songwriters were saying, no matter what, we should make sure that we have a decent royalty rate. I care about songwriters. It's the creator that we have to make sure that we take care of. And I thought my proposal was, in fact, increasing the ability of songwriters to get additional money. We know that songwriters make more money through the performance right and from PROs than they do from the administration of the mechanical compulsory license.
Mm-hmm. Is the proposal you have a narrower group of changes as opposed to some of the other proposals out? I noticed that some of my colleagues on the committee have weighed in on 115 and earlier times.
If you are not going to abolish the compulsory license and your choice is to reform it, then I strongly recommend reforming it on a blanket license type basis. I think there was agreement when we were overseeing discussions last summer that the 114 blanket license worked much more efficiently than the title by title composed on music publisher by music publisher system.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to just thank you very much for moving us along in this direction and ask the chairman, I assume that we're going to have additional hearings, and we'll be hearing from the ASCAP, BMI, CSACs of the world on the same subject, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Conyers, if you'll yield, we've had two hearings involving the witnesses whom you have just mentioned, and I'm sure there will be additional not only hearings but discussions on the subject as well.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The gentleman from Virginia, Mr. Goodlatte, is recognized for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Peters, welcome. Do you believe that providing for courts to resolve disputes over royalty rates for public performances has worked to decide those rates when the private parties cannot agree?
You're talking about the rate courts in the consent decrees.
Right.
Yes.
If Congress adopted your idea to allow MROs to license reproduction and distribution rights for phono records, do you believe that applying such a rate dispute mechanism would be useful for those licenses as well?
It may be. We actually have had a short time to talk to the parties, but if there's one thing that they vehemently disagree about, it's that issue. So I guess for me, I would like to see if in fact there was a problem that developed, and if in fact it did develop, and the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice felt the remedy was in fact an expansion of the consent decrees to cover rate courts in this area, then that would be the way to go.
How would that, what would you, we then have to come back to the Congress for additional legislation, or would
no,
you simply
it,
be
it,
looking at a court expanding its own jurisdiction?
Yes, you would be looking at an expansion of the existing consent decrees if in fact it turned out that there was a problem with regard to, you know, monopolistic practices.
Right. In order for providers to offer legitimate online music services and new physical music products to compete with illegal services, these providers need certainty that they will be able to license the reproduction and distribution rights to all music with greater ease. What provisions in your plan would create more certainty that these licenses would be more readily available to these legitimate music services and products?
Actually, we chose the PRO model because they serve all comers. And you have the license no matter what. You work out the details later. And I think that was the model that we wanted. All people who wanted licenses could get them. The details, you know, might come later, but you still could, in fact, use the work.
And you think that will be easy enough? And you testified to the chairman that you don't envision having too many of these organizations?
Right. That is my anticipation. I will just cite that I was on the website of some of the PROs, and they've got licenses for podcasting and many of the new forms of making works available on the internet. So I have faith that that would be handled.
Do any of the provisions of the consent decrees operating in the performance rights realm help to create this kind of certainty for the licensing of performance rights?
I have to say, I'm not an expert on the consent decrees, and I'm really, we can look into that answer and get back to you on it, but I don't feel comfortable answering it right now.
Well, that'd be fine, Mr. Chairman, if she could be allowed to do that. I would certainly be interested in having your additional thoughts on that subject. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Goodlatte. The gentleman from California, Mr. Berman, is recognized for his questions.
Well, Ms. Peters, thank you very much for a very bold proposal. I think it's in a way, I like the idea of starting off with the almost the revolutionary and then unlike Iraq, try to see what the consequences are beforehand. I want to press you. I guess both the chairman and Mr. Goodlatte raised this issue. But why in the world that you're proposing will the MROs look more like the performance rights organizations? Three, using blanket licenses.
Right.
Then, I mean, nothing in your proposal would put a limit on the number, and nothing in your proposal would require blanket licensing, as I understand it.
That's right.
Why would it look more like the PROs than like the situation we now have with the mechanical license? What I mean is the PROs developed in a non-digital world.
That is right. But they've adapted to a digital world.
Yes. Why wouldn't we be more likely to see a proliferation of publishers who decide to be their own MRO, in effect?
Well, let me start with, yes, they could. Our proposal doesn't necessarily require that in the end there will be a blanket license, but a blanket license must be offered in our proposal. So, from my perspective, if you look at what's happening...
A blanket license...
must be offered.
For a licensee to utilize...
Yes.
The reproduction...
Yes.
Performance...
Yes.
Yes. The whole bundle of rights must be offered.
It must be offered
at a rate determined through negotiations between the the MRO and the licensee.
Right. And it's possible, just like today.
And if they haven't negotiated it with a dispute resolution mechanism, to essentially set the price, the fair price. Okay, go on now.
I'm
sure I understand.
What I was actually going to say is, based on the experience of the PROs, it is much cheaper to administer a blanket license. And although they are required to do per program license, those are administratively difficult. So it would seem to me, now you have to know my entire career is in the government, so I have never worked in the real life business world, but it would seem that the blanket licensing would be the most efficient way. PROs and I think even Harry Fox Agency try to give the composer and the music publisher as much of the money as they possibly can. Problem with HFA is the title by title. So it seems to me not to make much sense to think that a PRO, if they had this, would in fact choose not to, in essence, push the blanket license.
And again, on the notion of why, in the context of now having the, why will songwriters and publishers, I guess they think they get a, the answer would be they get a better deal this way. That's why they would.
Hopefully, yes.
And rather than become their own MRO.
Right. And in the PRO scenario, there is, in fact, a direct payment to songwriters. It's 50% to publishers, 50% direct payment to songwriters.
All right. Now, talk about this issue of the consent decree. That is, if they're still allowed after... No, never mind. Every 4 years, we'll be back. Explain a little more slowly for me where the consent decree comes in to this, as opposed to us legislating an alternative dispute resolution mechanism.
The two of the PROs are currently subject to a consent decree,
right,
with regard to the performance right. And the question is, what happens vis-a-vis that consent decree should you add these additional rights to what they can do? And we actually tried to start a conversation with the Justice Department, but we only were able to contact the Antitrust Division in the last few days. So we're not sure how all of this would come out, but we think that, or we hope that, the Antitrust Division would be persuaded that our proposal does not raise serious antitrust concerns, and there really wouldn't need to be an adjustment at this point in time. But if, in fact, it turned out that in practice, then you could expand the consent decree to cover the additional rights.
And what do we do during the transition period?
Transition period...
From the passage of the legislation to...
Until the point where you realize it's broken. I'm hoping it's not broken. I'm actually...
Well, the parties don't come together. You get relatively little privately negotiated. And now you have to deal with the mechanism for setting a rate. What happens during that interim period?
The gentleman from California is recognized for an additional minute.
I'm not totally sure. I would, maybe there are dispute resolution clauses that could be put in the contracts, or as this is happening, the Antitrust Division could start talking with the parties. I don't have the ultimate.
And actually, you could, if you knew the way it was going to be set, well, the problem is you don't, but if you knew how this was going to be settled, the obligations could accrue. And then the amount of money owed could be determined later. Right. That's done a lot of times.
Well, I was assuming that you can always get the license and worry about what you owe later. But for people, that doesn't give much comfort not knowing what they're going to owe.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Keller, is recognized for his questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Peters, for being here today. I have read your complete testimony, and I've also read various memos and other items from industry members, and I'm reminded of the many media reports of identical twins who speak their own language, which they understand, but nobody else knows what the hell they're talking about. So I'm going to simplify things and walk you through. Let me tell you what I do know about children as someone who has two kids in elementary school. This is what I know about 10-year-olds in fourth grade. They don't want to pay $18 for a CD that has one hit song and 11 crappy songs. They don't want to break the law by illegally downloading because they've heard that you could be sued or even sent to jail. And they kind of like MTV videos. So with that in mind, the ideal situation for that 10-year-old and fourth grader would be a DVD CD, one on one side, one on the other, that has the top 12 songs of the current top 40 along with the music videos for their songs. That, I think, may be the future for these kids. So some creative entrepreneur comes around and he wants to distribute this DVD-CD combination and play by the rules. He wants it in all the record stores and Walmarts throughout America. He wants to do it in a way that is legal and quick and that fairly compensates the copyright owners. Under this scenario, I want to see how he would go about doing that under existing law versus your proposal. So let's start with the CD side of it. He wants to get the rights to these 12 songs on the CD. Under existing law, I would imagine his first stop would be with the Harry Fox Agency, since you've testified they have 65 to 90% of the market share. Is that right?
Yes. And if it's the top 10 or 12, they probably have it.
Okay.
So they would go to Harry Fox to get the reproduction and distribution right. And at that point, if all he's doing is making the CD,
right?
The question would be, where is he getting it from? If he's downloading it from an online service, or did he buy the CD? Whether the performance right is implicated depends on how he gets.
Okay, let's say it's just the mechanical licensing rights we're talking about.
Okay,
let's say that 10 of the 12 songs we can get from Harry Fox under existing scenario, he has to track down the other two licensors of music publisher rights.
Right.
And that could take a while.
It depends. If they're top songs, I would think that the name of the publisher would be on the album, or the data would be available, and probably could contact the publisher.
Under your proposal, would it make it any easier to track down those licensors other than Harry Fox, or would that essentially stay the same?
Well, if it's a blanket license, there would be several places that you would go to clear for all of the songs. The whole purpose is that in the PROs, if you get the three licenses, you're essentially covered for everything. If, in fact, you can't find the copyright owner, the way it is today, you could use a statutory license by coming to the copyright office, looking up the records to see whether or not it was registered. If it was registered, then you would serve, or you could contact that publisher,
okay.
Could serve. But you also have to deal with the record company.
All right, but let me go on, because I got some follow-up. So
yeah,
we've managed to now track down the appropriate people, the licensors of all these 12 songs. Under existing law, it's there's a compulsory license. So in other words, as long as I pay the appropriate amount of money, I can use that song.
If you follow the terms and conditions,
right,
in the statute, or you get a modified license from the publisher.
Now, under your proposal, you're talking about possibly doing away with the compulsory license.
Yes.
So the songwriter may say, you know what, I don't want my song listed on that compilation CD. Is that right?
If, in fact, it were part of a PRO, no, they couldn't, because it would be required to be offered on a blanket basis.
So as many licenses would still be available?
The truth is, in certain circumstances, maybe the songwriter could say no. But most songwriters want to make money. So most songwriters want to license.
Okay. And so getting tracking down all these people and making sure they're appropriately paid, do you think your proposal would make that process on the CD side any quicker than it exists right now?
Personally, yes.
And that's because of the blanket licensing issue when you...
And going one place.
Okay. Now let's flip over the CD to the DVD side.
Now, the truth is, if it were a mechanical and Harry Fox did, in fact, represent all those people,
right,
could be one-stop shopping with Harry Fox, too.
Which would be ideal. Now, let me ask, as a follow-up to that, let's say Harry Fox has it all, let's say 100% of all these songs, and we do away with the compulsory license, what's to keep them from charging whatever they want to charge?
The marketplace.
But there's no competitor. They have 100% of the song. What's to keep them from saying, you know what, I'm going to charge you three times that, or take a walk?
They could try. It's really like as ASCAP and BMI and CSAC negotiate with the broadcasters. They have all the music.
Okay, and just one final question, Mr. Chairman.
Without objection, the gentleman is recognized for an additional minute.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, this is a harder question, but you flip over that CD. Now we're on the DVD side. You want to get the rights to those corresponding music videos. Tell me how, if any, there would be a difference between existing law and your new proposal.
Actually, we don't address music videos. Those are audiovisual works, not just musical compositions. There are synchronization rights that are involved that today are handled by music publishers. So there is more licensing involved when you're making a music video.
Okay, and whatever,
separate licenses.
And whatever those complications are, and I understand that there are many, are not going to be affected by what you're suggesting. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. The gentleman from Virginia, Mr. Boucher, is recognized for his question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and I want to commend you for your persistence in holding a series of hearings and giving in-depth consideration to the need for legislation that will remove the barriers that currently inhibit the ability of digital media companies to use the Internet in order to compete very successfully with peer-to-peer file sharing. I think we all acknowledge that need, and I'm very impressed with the effort you've undertaken, Mr. Chairman, to help us achieve that goal. And Ms. Peters, I want to commend you for your long-standing work in this area also, and what I think is a very thoughtful report. You've done a first-rate job with this, and I want to ask you just a couple of questions about some of your recommendations. I have listened very carefully to the conversation regarding your preferred alternative, which is that Section 115 be repealed, and that we basically trust the market in order to agglomerate the various songwriter publisher interests, and that we also trust the market in order to set a fair rate. And I have some concerns about both of those components. I am a little bit worried that, notwithstanding your projection, that what we would see is a small number of music rights organizations arise in order to agglomerate and license these rights, that what we might wind up seeing is dozens of them. And if that were to happen, the digital media companies would be placed at a severe disadvantage in order to have to negotiate separately with dozens of agencies, some of which would have some songs, some of which would have others. And I guess there's no way to know at this juncture whether your projection is right, we would hope that it is, or whether the eventuality might prove that dozens of these rights organizations arise. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would simply note a concern with regard to that and recommend that at some future hearing on this subject, we invite all of the various externally interested parties and get their opinion on how they think that particular part of the market would arise. The other concern I would note, Ms. Peters, relates to the rate. Mr. Berman engaged you in a very thorough discussion of that subject. I won't reprise that, except to note that I really don't share your confidence on several points. First of all, I have some real doubts that the Department of Justice would in fact seek to extend the consent decrees in order to provide a rate backstop. I think it would be better if we considered providing that backstop directly through the legislation. And I would be very interested in hearing what other witnesses will have to say at future hearings concerning that possibility. And I know you've acknowledged the potential for doing all of this in your testimony. So let me depart from Section 115 and take just a moment to talk about a few other things. Also within the general sphere of effective music licensing that will make it easier for the lawful companies to compete with the unlawful. You performed another valuable public service several years ago when, in response to Section 104 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, your office studied a number of questions. And then you published what I thought was a thoughtful and highly constructive report that made a number of recommendations. One of those recommendations is that server copies, including buffer copies and other ephemeral copies that are made in very large numbers through the act of streaming online and digital webcasting, be declared to be fair use. Your interpretation in the 104 report is that those ephemeral copies, buffer copies, etc., are in fact fair use. But I think you suggested at the same time that we codify that principle just to make sure that the ultimate interpretation by the courts and others was consistent with your view. Do you still make that recommendation to us?
Actually, with respect, we've looked at it with respect to 115, and we certainly said that if you were amending Section 115, which is the compulsory license, that all of that activity should be encompassed within the compulsory license, and in certain areas that when in fact what you have is a licensed download and that the performance is simply to accomplish that download, we didn't see any separate economic value. One of the things...
In the ephemeral copy.
In the ephemeral copy. Now, one of the things about our proposal is that we can argue long and hard about the value of those and whether they're implicated and you should pay for them. By putting the rights together, it really takes away that stress. But yes, in generally, we stick with our thought that when you have a licensed activity and you have copies that are made or incidental performances, you can argue whether they're public or not, that those should not necessarily be separately compensatable events.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent for an additional minute.
Without objection, the gentleman is recognized for an additional minute.
And Ms. Peters, I have two other questions. I'm going to ask these in a block, and you can answer in a block if you like. I would hope you would separately address each. You also suggested in your Section 104 report that in order to make the purchase of legal music on the web more attractive to the consumer, that the right of the consumer to back up the music that he has lawfully acquired be recognized as a fair use. I would be very interested in acknowledging that in whatever statute we report from this committee. Do you continue to make that recommendation to us also?
When you have, yes, legally purchased material, we basically said that everybody was in fact doing it, and we might as well acknowledge it.
Okay, thank you. I forgot to ask this other question at the same time. I have always thought that we should equate webcasting with the rights and privileges that inure within the record store, within the physical record store, with respect to the ability to sample for 20 seconds or 30 seconds the music before the decision is made to purchase it. And so you acknowledged also in your 104 report that these samples, it would be appropriate to equalize treatment with regard to these. And so I would ask you if you would recommend to us that we allow the web 20-second or 30-second sample to be given the same license-free status that presently applies to the in-store sales.
I'm talking about Section 110.7.
That's correct.
We think that certainly there's a reasonable argument that using a snippet for the purpose of selling music so that people can listen, do I want to buy it or not, is something that we could support. But the question is, how much is the snippet? And there have been talk of 30 seconds and 60 seconds, and I'm on the 60 seconds may be too long.
60 seconds may be too long.
Right.
Well, thank you. Those were very helpful answers, and again, thank you for the good job you've done with this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Boucher. The gentleman from Utah, Mr. Cannon, is recognized for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, Ms. Peters. To follow up on Mr. Keller's comment, in a world where we have twins or triplets or quadruplets or however many people out there speaking this special language, you've always been very clear with the committee and very helpful to me. Following up also on one of the things that Mr. Keller was saying, I take it from where you're headed that you believe that these that your proposal is going to help legal royalty paying online kinds of services compete against piracy. Is that the case, and if so, how will that work?
I was essentially saying that if, in fact, it was easy to get a license and license all of the things that you need to do, then, in fact, I thought that that would encourage legitimate music services. And the more music services that we have providing product and competing with each other, that is a good thing. And I do think that many people in the United States would prefer to help songwriters and would buy the legitimate if, in fact, it was a viable option to the free.
And because of the efficiencies your system would have, it would, the system would be cheaper, and therefore you could compete at a lower price I take it with free.
And that people who had these services were able to acquire the entire music repertoire, not just parts of it.
So is the point of your legislation to combine the systems so that the mechanical side of the equation functions like the PROs?
Yes.
Right. Thank you. One reason we've decided to review the issue of music licensing is because today customers are not able to access all of the new products they want to buy in the marketplace. It's my understanding that DVD audio discs and other new formats cannot break into the marketplace to meet consumer demand. Under your proposal, would these types of formats automatically be able to be licensed and available to consumers?
If you're talking about DVD audio, it may have an audiovisual component that I haven't addressed.
So
I only address the music part.
Yep.
So it may not.
So where do we go from? I mean, obviously the world doesn't make the nice distinctions we have historically drawn here. How do we get to the next phase?
In our proposal, we actually looked at what the problem seemed to be, which was the right to get the music. If it's a broader problem, and it's true that some of the parties have identified broader problems, lyrics, video, synchronization rights, then it's appropriate for the committee to look at those things and determine what the scope of any activity, remedial activity it wants to make should be made.
Thank you again for your very clear thoughts, and I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Cannon. The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Wexler, is recognized for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd first like to just associate myself with the remarks of Mr. Boucher regarding the thoughtfulness, obviously, that your plan was prepared. If I could ask you, just in terms of the theory of where you think you're headed, in previous hearings, we've heard the predictions of the variety, and Mr. Keller spoke to them a bit about the new type of products that would be offered, the music videos, the concert footage, the lyrics, and so forth. Are you confident that the proposed changes that you've associated yourself with, that if we make them, that the licenses to all of these works will be at least as available as they are today? I mean, can you assure us that that'll be the case?
There's no assurance.
In your view?
It's my view that they would be, but it's only my view. I don't have a crystal ball, and I just think that people don't make money unless they license works. I mean, I have never heard a copyright owner, there's a few recluse authors, but most of the time people want their works to be licensed, and they want it licensed throughout the world so that they can be paid.
Would you agree that if the net result of the proposed changes are that the works are less available than they are today, then the changes have not been successful?
That would be bad. Yes, I agree. I mean, the whole goal is more availability. So anything less than more availability is not a good thing.
Okay. I'm done, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wexler. Ms. Peters, thank you very much for your testimony. This has been most helpful and most informative. And if there are no further questions, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.